And good evening, everyone, and welcome to our weekend wrap show. Joining me, as usual, we have Macca and a sick Nikki. How are we going, guys?
I'm okay.
Well, I'm okay because we won.
Yeah, it was pretty solid, and we'll have a bit to talk about, I'm sure. So let's get right into the weekend's results. And it was on Friday night. GWS giving Western Bulldogs a bit of a touch-up in the end after an even first half, 105-57. Is that the end for the Bulldogs, do we think?
Well, I'd hope so, because on that performance, they're not good enough to be in the finals.
Well, apparently not quite. I think they could. There's still possibility, depending on some results, they could make it, but I think it pretty much was shutting the door on them. If they do, it'll be a first game out scenario.
Yeah, they don't look a shadow of the team that they were last year, and it just shows you what momentum can do for a side, doesn't it?
Yep, sure does.
On Saturday, we had Sydney absolutely destroying Fremantle, 143-39, a margin of quite a bit. What's that, 94 points? And Sydney won 12 of their last 14, I think.
Yeah. They have, and that was a record loss to Ross Lyons, but that was, they just beat, I think it was by 3 points, they just beat our score against them, which was previous to that, his record loss.
Yeah, I must admit, that was a massacre, and Sydney are, if there's a major threat to us winning a premiership this year, it's Sydney.
Well, it'll be interesting, and I don't want to get ahead of the discussion, but it'll be interesting to see whether next week's result means anything with a couple of outs for us. Anyway, moving on. Richmond managed to lose a game they really should have won. Geelong 80 to Richmond 66, so a margin of 14 points. Richmond just burnt themselves. They should have beaten Geelong in this game.
Yeah, but I hope to God they're the mob we play in a home first final, because They just managed, as you said, to beat themselves. You don't have to do it.
Oh, that was just shocking to watch. I actually had tipped Richmond, and then on the day I thought about it and went, no, hang on. Revolt actually causes them issues up forward because they just become too focused on him, whereas they've been playing so well without him. And I was like, oh, should I change my tip? And I didn't, and I bloody well should have.
Actually, what you said sounds crazy, Nicky, but it's quite right. They do. They are over-focused on him, and they were over-focused on him.
What do you think about Hardwick's comments, and Vardy Magic brings it up in the chat, and to get over to those people in the chat. Hardwick's comments after the game about the umpiring, I thought were terribly overblown, considering his team actually deserved the blowtorch far more than the umpires.
Well, I presume he's saying that Geelong got a good hand out, and they do generally get a good hand out down on that ground, but I don't think that was the difference.
Well, in the first quarter, it was going Richmond's way, not Geelong's, so I don't see what he's complaining about, unless he's just trying to take the Cockwomble nomination for this week away from Tom Lynch.
Well, it was 20-7 free kicks at half-time, and yet watching the game, you didn't feel as if Geelong were getting much of the rub of the green. I think it was just that they were getting themselves in positions to win the ball and win free kicks. And Hardwick, on the other hand, saw it differently and invoked the old, home crowd and all the rest of it. To his credit, though, he did acknowledge that Richmond have a similar thing when they play at the G. But I just felt like it was actually deflecting blame away from his team when his team really should have done better.
Yeah, they should have done better, because they will never get Geelong in a weaker state than that, without their full forward and without the two key midfielders. And we're talking about two very good midfielders that were out. Admittedly, they had one get injured during the course of the game, but there's still no excuse. Geelong were in a weakened state and they were there to be taken.
Yep, opportunity lost. Anyway, Brisbane, after a very close first section of the game, ran away with it to the tune of 58 points over Gold Coast. Brisbane 142 to Gold Coast 84. Dane Beans playing really well, Tommy Rockliffe playing well under emotional duress, and I reckon Brisbane will be on the improve next season. Hard to read the Gold Coast, though, with Solomon in charge.
Well, you got a situation. Brisbane Lions, as I said last week, I took back my comments about them being hopeless because they do have a future because they've got a lot of good young lads. Gold Coast, though, mate, I know that they didn't have Tommy Lynch, and he's a star, but major concerns, I think, because they just fell away to nothing. And, you know, Nablet, he's got a hamstring, he hasn't got a hamstring, he played, he doesn't play. Very strange situation with him, I think. But having said that, now the rumour is, again, some of you stated on radio, TV, that Tommy Rupp is Adelaide bound. Whether that's true or not, I don't know.
Well, we do need... Sorry, Nicky, we do need... Oh, well, you don't need, but I reckon we could do with just a touch of class to go with the workhorses that we currently have in the midfield, and Tommy Rockliffe would be a welcome addition, I reckon. And interestingly, they've been playing him out of the midfield over the last month or so, almost as if they're preparing themselves for that eventuation.
Yeah, he's been playing much more time up forward. There's no doubt about that. Another reason for that might well be that he did his shoulder when tackling some weeks back, and I have noticed that since his return, he hasn't been doing very many tackles.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, Macker. I hadn't picked up on that one.
Yeah, not sure about that one. Anyway, moving along, West Coast struggled to overcome Carlton at Domain, eventually 100-83 on the back of some Kennedy brilliance. They don't look convincing at all, although they'll probably limp into the eight.
Yeah. Although somebody, I think, pointed out that it could be a possibility of depending where, you know, where Port finishes, it could be like a Port West Coast final. And I'd actually back West Coast to actually win that one at Adelaide Oval.
Yeah, well, yeah. West Coast, ordinary side, so are Port, but we're talking about West Coast here with Carlton. I mean, Carlton are right down the bottom, and Carlton have...
they're no mugs, though.
Yeah, but they're playing a lot of youngers as well. And, you know, I just think that West Coast, they're not a good side. They revolve around Kennedy, and if they've got no Kennedy, they've got no show. And there's no flag there.
You wouldn't have thought so with the current squad, Macca. I reckon there's a bit of churning to go on over the next season or two with that club. Melbourne did what they had to do against St Kilda, getting over the line 96-72. I didn't see the game, but you know, credit to Melbourne, that the game that they had to win is usually the one that they drop, and they beat the only other team outside of the eight that really has a shot of getting there. So if they keep going, they'll be in the finals.
I saw that one, Phoenix, and yeah, you should have watched it because you wouldn't have said what you just said if you had of. Basically, if St Kilda could kick straight, and they were shocking at it, they should have won, and they weren't playing well. Melbourne were not convincing at all.
Yeah, I watched some of it because I couldn't stand watching it anymore.
Oh, it was horrible.
It was a very low-standard game. Melbourne gutted it out to win it. I'd say that's the best way to put it. They just, in my opinion, Nicky, I just thought they out-gutted St Kilda.
Yeah, just towards that ending bit. But if the Saints had been able to nail a couple of those shots, which they had, which weren't too hard, yeah, I think it would have been a vastly different result.
Well, nevertheless, in the end, Melbourne got the result, and that's the result that they needed, and they stay in the hunt. Today, also, we had Hawthorn getting over North Melbourne, both teams out of the race. That was Luke Hodges' last game in Tassie, so I suppose the Hawks wanted to do it for him. And at Adelaide Oval, we had Port, unconvincingly, I thought, getting over Collingwood 98-71. Margin of 27 points keeps them in fifth, but I think it still inflates their position on the ladder.
Well, from my point of view, if there's any doubt on whether Buckley should be reappointed or not, having watched that game, there's no way he should be reappointed. In that first half, the game plan that they used, which was hang on the ball, kick sideways, backwards, but don't dare go attacking. And, of course, they eventually turn the ball over and get a score. But the first half was one of the most craziest pieces of game plan I've ever seen. And the coaching was despicable because obviously playing to that plan. But in the second half, when they played a lot more attacking, if they played like that all game, I think they would have won the game.
Kind of interesting in that I decided to have a look at who their forward line coach was for Collingwood because I wasn't sure. And I found out that their forward line coach is also responsible for their ball movement, and it's Brenton Sanderson. So, Macca, that explains perfectly what went wrong because what you were describing, first off, that defensive action is their ball movement, that they decided to implement something new. Well, we all knew what Sanderson's results up against Port were.
Yep.
And their forward line, they actually have some really nice talent up in that forward line. I do rate Jamie Elliott quite a bit. And Darcy Moore, I mean, he's got some really nice in him. They just do not use that forward line properly at all. And you're right, in the second half they decided to go back to how they kind of normally play. And they started to get a bit of a run on. But I said in the thread on the Big Footy book that basically watching that game was like the visual representation of how I'm currently feeling with this flu.
Probably fair comment. It wasn't a very good game to watch at all, and there's no doubt that Port are flattered by their position on the ladder by a long, long chalk. They're not of that standard. They'll be in the finals. They might even get a home final, but, gee, they're only a very ordinary side. Robbie Gray, outstanding effort by Robbie Gray. He's a very, very classy individual, and a couple of others, but, gee, they're not a good side.
Anyway, onwards to the game that matters, and it was Adelaide. There was a really entertaining game, I thought. I don't know how you guys felt, but I never felt like we were going to get done. And as a result, it was just a really enjoyable game to watch. In the end, Adelaide getting up 18 goals, 15-123 to the Bombers, 12 goals, 8-80, a margin of 43 points in the end, which was also, I think, the halftime margin, pretty close. What did you guys think?
Well, I thought that to some degree we allowed Essendon to dictate the style of game that it was going to be, and we went along with it. So often we would just play slightly differently if they got a little bit threatening. But from my point of view, it was not the type of, well, it's just another alternative type of game, I thought, rather than what we've been watching every week. Certainly not the way we normally play.
I thought the way we were setting up from that first quarter was very much to stop Essendon's run because we know it's a fast decker, Etihad. That's the way they like to play. We were making sure they couldn't do that kick and mark possession game that they liked to then break the lines. We hardly ever gave them the centre. And I remember the commentators were like, hang on, this is looking a really defensive game. It's completely opposite what we thought. And Pike was interesting in his comments afterwards that he said that the reason why we got so many scores from turnovers was there was so few stoppages, and he was right, really unusual.
Yeah, that's true, Nicky. And at the very, very start of the game, Essendon were full of run trying to play a very, very fast game. And you're quite right, what happened after that. But they did get some score on the board by doing it very early in the piece. I just think that to some degree, Pike looked frustrated that as if something wasn't quite working. And that's the most animated I've seen him during a game, yet we were leading all the way. And yet so many times you look up and he was frustrated at what was going on. So something wasn't quite going the way he wanted
A couple
to go.
Of times when they showed him, I know was, I think, when Knight kicked it into the... No, somebody kicked it into the centre to Knight, who was actually manned up. And it's like, it's fine to take that risky kick, but it's kind of got to pay off. You've got to have a slight advantage, and there was no advantage to that kick going to that spot. It was a stupid decision. So he was just on screen was showing how I was feeling as well. There were some stupid decisions made by our players.
Yeah, but having said that, I thought the one good thing about it is, having played it the way it was, it did show that when we exerted our class, that we could actually change the course of the game. And when it really counted, we did that several times. When they challenged, we'd put another gap there, and they'd come again, and we'd put another gap. And Essendon had a real game to go for here, because that they were trying for to preserve their position in the eight, and they gave it 100%. And they had a couple of key players missing out of their side, but to their credit, they gave it everything they had, which wasn't good enough, because we played better, although not perfectly. And you know, it was a good game. It was a good game to tune us up. Next week it'll be a different style of game again, and the one after that will be a different style of game again. So it's good for finals to have all these different types of games.
I felt like Pike was frustrated with some of our finishing. I think you're right, Nicky. The last decision was sometimes frustrating, and there were certainly some frustrating shots at goal at times. But overall, I felt like we controlled the game for all except a portion of the second quarter, when we did in fact give away the corridor. Essendon decided to play kamikaze run football, and it took us a little while just to adjust to that. But the pleasing thing about it all was that we did adjust to it, and after about the 10-minute, or just after the 10-minute mark of the second quarter, their run through the middle had settled down, because we'd been able to restructure ourselves defensively. And you could tell by the back end of that quarter, they were rogered, and it allowed us to kick clear again. Let's have a look at some head-to-head stats. And 387 to 377 disposals. We kicked it 1.5 times to one handball. 119 marks to 99. Tackles fairly even, 68-61 our way. Hit-outs, 35-33. But I want to know your thoughts on the hit-out or the rucking adjudication. I felt like Leuenberger was actually trying to date Sam Jacobs rather than actually ruck.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it quite like that. But it looked like he was, you know, more interested in getting a spot on WWW and wrestling, because he just mauled him, absolutely mauled him.
Oh, yeah, he was just hanging on to him. He was trying to hold his arms down at almost every rucking contest. It was so weird to see that and it not be paid, but we know that Jacobs rarely gets freeze. The other one on top of that is Danaher. Now, he's a great talent and everything else, but he full-on puts two hands in the back of his opponents anytime he goes for a mark and pushes, and he's allowed to get away with it. The way that he's umpired, I think, is not fair to defenders.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean, Nicky. But, you know, he's tall, and sometimes they just can't see what he's doing, I suppose. But just on that rucking thing, isn't there a rule that when a ball's going to be thrown in, that they're supposed to be 2 metres apart at the start?
Or 1 metre.
It's a metre, Macca, and they do separate them, but the very moment that the umpire lets the ball, they re-engage. What frustrates me about the whole thing is there's a rule in football. I reckon the rule's been around for, 120 years? You're not allowed to hold. Now, I don't care who's holding first or if they're both holding together. There has to be a free pay. This whole umpire calling both holding, that's rubbish. Like, someone is holding and then someone is holding in retaliation. And it's a blight on the game to see two ruckmen just sit there wrestling and trying to break their arms free to give a decisive tap. And I wish they would do something about it. It's just ridiculous.
Yep, and on at least one occasion they were wrestling so much, none of their forearms could be raised because they were all tangled up and the ball just lobbed to the ground.
Yeah, just stupid. Anyway, what else have we got here? Freeze, we looked like we were getting the rub of the green, and we got 7 more. I felt like the umpiring was pretty average, all told. 33 scoring shots to 20 sort of illustrates our dominance in the end. Again, our disposals per scoring shot is bloody fantastic, 11.7 to 18.8. Clearances were even, 30 each. Rebound 50s, Essendon 41-31, which surprises me because I thought we got a lot of bounce off halfback and certainly got, we scored 96 points off turnovers or something ridiculous. Must be a world record. 47-62 inside 50s. Those stats, without going through the other ones just yet, those stats indicate that we were just far more efficient with the ball.
Well, we were as well. We definitely were. And we had, we'll talk about later the individuals, but some of the individuals must have gone at pretty high percentages, I think.
Yeah, there were.
Yeah. Contested posies, we got on top 144-127. Uncontested's pretty even. Effective disposals, we went at 76.7, they went at 72.7, which is probably indicative of the fast deck, although I felt our field kicking was fantastic. 24 contested marks to 11 and 22 marks inside 50 to 8. That stat right there is one of a couple of stats that I wanted to highlight. Our ability to stretch them inside 50 and also just to find targets inside 50 was a key difference.
On that, I heard Josh Jenkins interviewed on Triple M today, and they asked him, about the whole thing of, his contested marking and, getting some marks over Hurley that he got. And he said that what's happened this year is that Teague's had a chat with both him and Tex, and they are not allowed to use the excuse that they get their arms wrapped up by their defender. They have to fight that. They have to make sure they can get to the contest. Teague is not going to accept that I got wrapped up. And so then the third man can come across, etc. So that's what he and Tex specifically have been working on with Teague a lot this year. He also said something which I thought was really interesting, was that you have to play as a forward how the defence is letting you. And because last year he and Eddie spent more time a little bit closer to goal, but all the other defences against us are now manning up that area, what we've now started to do is lead up to the ball instead. And so Josh is spending a lot more time up the ground because of that and leading at the ball. But I thought those were two really interesting points.
Well, one thing I will say about Jenkins, we're often critical about his lack of overhead marking, but he took some strong marks on the weekend.
One thing I'll say about Hurley is that he's being played out of position, and I know it's because of his size, but for a bloke to lead their possession count and yet essentially be towed up in his KPI, which is stopping his opponent, Hurley is about as good at one-on-one contesting as Jake Lever, in my opinion.
Yep, good point.
He's a star footballer, there's no doubt about that. He's a very, very good player. But they put him there because he is that good player, that he can get a lot of the ball and clear it. But if you put a lesser player there, maybe the scores might be a lot higher against them. But it'd be a lovely luxury to be able to play him either somewhere around the middle or at half forward.
The talk is, Macca, that he doesn't want to play forward. He wants to play down back, and he refuses to go up forward.
Yeah, they want him down back, but I think he actually need another key position defender so that he can be a little bit of an Alex Rance type. We saw Alex Rance get towed up by Harry Taylor in similar circumstances, and those type of players, they're playmakers and they're not accountable and they're not terribly good overhead in one-on-one situations. And what the Bombers need is another big guy down back to allow Hurley to play that intercept third tall, because he does get a lot of the ball and he does use it pretty well, and it would give them some more versatility. Going through the last of the stats, centre clearances 14-16, stoppage clearances 16-14. It was a pretty close tussle. But this is an interesting stat and one that I wanted to highlight. Essendon score involvements, Essendon 91, Adelaide 150. What that tells me is that we just moved the ball around the ground at will, and we were able to break Essendon's defence open by spreading well and then going in inside with the right option, whereas Essendon tended to kick and hope a little bit.
I can't add to that. I think that's a very good summary of it.
Well, there you go. So, yeah, I think it was a combination of our ability to break even at the contest, our efficiency with foot by foot in particular, our ability to spread and get lots of people involved in scoring chains and then to hit the right target at the end, and certainly being able to catch them on the turnover so often allowed us just to slice through them. And some of the chain of ball movements from the back half were just, it was champagne footy at times.
To the point where it made the game look ridiculously easy. Obviously it's not, because, you know, the guys that have spread and have probably run their guts out to get to those positions to, you know, to make, even if it's only to make a vacancy for the other players to go into. But it does look ridiculously easy at times.
Which just shows you how well-drilled we are. And that's completely on the coaching group for setting that up and then trusting the players to carry it out.
Yeah, I hope we can retain Teague. I think he's going to be a bit of a target.
I think it's also indicative of how hard our players are working at the moment too, because we do get numbers behind the ball at times and we force those turnovers, and then we've always got options. Very rarely do you see us held up in transition because we don't have anything up forward. We've always got options. And that takes a hell of a lot of running power and a hell of a lot of discipline to go when it's your turn. And I think that's a real key to our success at the moment, is the fact that we can get back defensively, but with ball in hand, we're not lazy with it as well in terms of making position going forward. It's going to be interesting to see what happens against a team like Sydney, who are very well structured defensively as well, because it's not often over the last month or so that those forward chains get broken. But Sydney have the capability of chopping us out and then catching us out of position. So it'll be interesting to see whether we try and play a slower brand of football or more defensive and in tight game of football against Sydney, or whether we chance our arm.
Yeah, I think Sydney are going to be a major test in every aspect of the game, because Sydney, if you look at their team, and they're not relying on stars, they're just relying on very good team footy, and they're a very tough team as well. They go in very hard for the ball. They've had hard edge that they've been saying that we've had lately, which I think is true. But, you know, Sydney have always had this hard edge. That's something they're very good at. So, yeah, they'll be a real test. And as you said earlier, this will tell us a lot. I think it will.
I think that what we've been setting up and what we've been working towards is so that we can match it with Sydney.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, Nikki. I think certainly the harder edge that we've been playing over the last month is indicative of a side that needed to step up, because it was one of the areas that we were lacking in the past. You know, whether we've got it to take it up to probably what I would say is the hardest midfield in the comp. Melbourne are pretty hard as well, but Sydney, I think, are the hardest midfield in the comp physically. Remains to be seen, but I'm less unconfident, if that's the right terminology, than I was maybe 6 weeks ago.
I think it's non-confident, but it doesn't matter. Are you saying that you're more confident than you were 6 weeks ago?
That's what I'm saying, although I'm not, I wouldn't say that I'm confident, but I'm not as not confident as I was.
All right, Alex, I think I understand what you're saying.
We're creating new words on the Crowcast.
I understand where you're coming from, and yeah, if you're talking about like maybe 6 weeks ago, we might have been doubtful, but We've been priming our game to play, I think, against Sydney. I think you're quite right about that, and because they have been the measuring stick for some time in terms of the way that hard edge and the way they play. If we can beat a Sydney, well, then you've got every chance of winning a flag.
Well, the thing is, Macca, they've been our measuring stick. I mean, we've been able to beat GWS simply because I believe that we work harder than GWS, particularly defensively. We've been able to match it with Geelong, except down at Skilled. And I think at the moment we would feel that we've now come up with a game plan that can defeat the Cats. Sydney the ones, and I wouldn't mind betting that our club thinks that it'll be Sydney in the GF if we get that far. But we've certainly build a game plan so that we don't turn up against Sydney like we did in the final last year, which is all you can really ask for.
That was embarrassing, the way we turned up. We just got brushed aside as if we weren't there right at the start. And that's exactly what we'll be trying to prevent against in future.
Well, and into that, we'll go into some individual stats because it was, again, our midfield that really stepped up. Matty Crouch, 35 disposals, 13 and 22. The four tackles, a couple of inside 50s, seven clearances, three rebound 50s, 20 contested possessions, if you don't mind, 82.9% disposal efficiency, if you don't mind, got four out of the middle and nine score involvements. Just a complete game again from Matt Crouch.
How can he not be all Australian? I mean, his form is outstanding. And when you measure him against the other big guns, he's second in disposals, and he's better than the majority of them.
And he's also, I mean, the one who's got those disposals is Tom Mitchell, and yet his metres gained is so far ahead of Mitchell it isn't funny, because he's actually proactive instead of just handballing to somebody close to him, except for last night when he kept trying to give it to his brother, who had a dog of a game. It was like, once he stopped giving it to Brad, things got better. I'm still in two minds as to whether he was best on ground or whether it was Smith.
That's a fair to the coin, and I think that's just a matter of opinion because Brodie Smith been best on ground and Matty Crouch could easily have been best on ground, you know, whichever one you think, and nobody can say you're wrong.
Well, I thought Matt was consistent over the four quarters. I thought Brodie had a very good first half but an excellent second half. Certainly in the third quarter when Essendon were making one of their little runs, Brodie certainly made some really telling plays that kept us in the game. His stats, 23 disposals, 15 and 8, 9 marks, which has really become a feature of his game, actually, Brodie Smith's marking. 5 tackles as well, 3 inside 50s, 5 rebound 50s, went at 82.6%, had 10... What the hell is BO? 10 bounces. 10 bounces. I thought they were. Never mind. 10 bounces, 8 scoring involvements, and 5 intercepts as well. Played 85% time on ground as well. It was probably, I reckon, almost Brodie's best game for the season.
Well, I think it was his best game of the season because he also played it fairly tough. He never shirked any issues either. He played. Quite a physical game, I thought, by his standards, the way he plays. Top effort, and, as I said, you could easily argue he was the best player. You could easily argue that Matty was. And you look at their efficiency percentages, both outstanding.
I loved his hit on Tip and Woody that he did, which then resulted in Atkins' goal. But I think what was so pleasing for me in terms of how he was playing was that he was minding Tip and Woody when he was up the ground and Brown had him when he was closer to goal. But that did not stop him from then attacking. And he kept Tip and Woody pretty much out of the game because they needed Tip and Woody to
poor
lift.
Old Tip and Woody had Brownie first who gave him absolutely nothing. I mean, Brownie, I love Brownie. He's just a miserly backman. He just doesn't like letting his man have a touch. And poor old Tippin Woody would have been starving.
And the SEN player ratings only gave Brown like a 6. He went, oh, he did his job.
That's because he's so unassuming, Lukey Brown. But there are moments in games where Luke Brown is one out against a dangerous player, and he very rarely lets you down, and he's invaluable in that back half. Brody, so the other value of Brody Smith is just his metres gained. 575 metres gained is just outstanding. And
that was 100.
Sorry?
Was that 100 more than the next player?
Yes, the next player was Rory with 457, Rory Atkins. And when you've got two running players that can combine for over 1,000 metres gained, that's invaluable. And let's just talk about Rory quickly. He had 16 kicks, 11 handballs for 27. He took 7 marks, kicked a goal, 6 inside 50s. He also went at 92.6% disposal efficiency with 11 contested possessions, 2 goal assists, 2... these new stats are killing me. 8 score involvements, 8 intercepts as well, and as I mentioned, 457 metres gained. When the game is fast like that, Rory Atkins really comes into his own, and it's probably the game probably suited him, I felt, this week.
I would have accepted if he just said he'd done good. I thought he played a terrific game, actually. That's... I've been very critical of his last couple of games that I thought they weren't quite where he should have been, and I thought that a couple of times he was quite physical the way he went about the ball. Other times when he did some very fancy dance steps, but I thought he played a very, very, very good game. His disposal efficiency speaks for itself, and he was a real weapon.
For me, I think because it was such that up and back that you're right, Phoenix, that type of game style suits an outside runner, which is what he's there for. But I really loved what we've seen from him the past couple of weeks, and we've talked about it before. When he was having that down patch, he wasn't getting back in defence so much and helping out. We were either setting up differently or we weren't being as on in terms of our defensive action as we had. Because he's now getting down back, that gives him more space to then actually run further up the ground. I think that's kind of what helps him. And I just think that he was on from the start.
Yeah.
He seemed to have that little mindset of like, nah, this is my game, I'm going to take it.
Yeah, he was on. You tell. You're quite right, Nicky. The other games, he's looked like he was struggling to participate, but this time it looked like he was, this is my game, as you said.
Now, Richie Douglas is another one that's had a real, enjoying a real rich vein of form at the moment. 23 disposals, 14 and 9. Took 6 marks, kicked a couple of goals, a couple of inside 50s. Again, 11 contested at 82.6% efficiency, 10 score involvements, nearly 400 metres gained, and 5 intercepts as well. Doesn't it add to our midfield when we've got Richard Douglas being able to work his way into the game like that, not only in the midfield, but also working his way up forward and hitting the scoreboard?
He's invaluable. I mean, he's playing actually one of his best years this year. And, they wondered where we're going to get our depth from the midfield. Well, he's put his hand up, and I reckon he's been quite some weeks in a row now. He's been
most importantly for me, he's kicking goals, which is what you want from a midfielder. I mean, we've got a ridiculous forward line, but when you can also put him up forward as the resting midfielder, he's dangerous around that area.
He is.
I think that's a really good point, Nicky. The fact that he hits any midfielder that hits a scoreboard is invaluable because it just, again, it's another thing that the opposition coach and the opposition team have to worry about. And Richie's been good for one or two a game over the last month, and it really adds to our depth through that midfield rotation. And, Macca, you know, we were right to question our midfield depth at the beginning of the year and in parts during the season. And, you know, I think what we were screaming for is blokes like Richie Douglas and David McKay and those, you know, more senior players, and Brad Crouch as well, who's not a senior player but certainly a highly rated player, to step up, you know, and what we're actually seeing is exactly what we wanted. So, and what these guys have been able to show and what the team's been able to show is when everyone is at peak form and playing well, we're very hard to stop.
Yeah, look, that's a very good point because, first of all, we didn't have Brad Crouch right at the beginning of the season. It looked pretty paper thin at the beginning of the season, but he didn't have a really good one this week, but that he's been building very nicely before that. Richie Douglas has been, he has stepped up and he's having one of his really good seasons. And David McKay is actually playing very good hard footy and, yeah, he'll make an error here and there, and but so do all the others. And he's having the best season for a long time as well, and contributing. Plus Hugh Greenwood, he's come out of nowhere, and he's a really hard edge, and he wins some very hard balls. He's got very good quick hands in close and tight, and it's turning into a good midfield.
Yep, I agree, let's talk about DMAC quickly because I think the thing that I've noticed about DMAC, and I think he has benefited from the confidence that the coaching panel and the selection panel have showed in him, he's playing with a steely determination that I don't think I've ever actually seen from David McKay, and I think it stems from a bit of self-belief, and I think credit has to go to the coaching staff against every pundit on Big Footy that they have stuck fat with him, and they've obviously given him roles and clear instructions. But he's now playing like a determined senior player in the team. And, 19 touches again this week with the 5 marks. He laid 7 tackles, 3 inside 50s, only the 6 contested, but he is our outside runner. But he went at 84% again, 7 score involvements, 400 metres gained. It's exactly the type of game that we want from David, and he's been delivering more consistently over the last month than I can remember him delivering.
Yep, no argument from me. And he's had seasons before where he's deserved the criticism that he's got, and perhaps he was given a luxury in sometimes in the past. But you got to talk about the present because that's all that really matters in footy. And at the moment, he's more than earning his spot in the side.
For me, what I loved was not just his tackles, but pretty much the whole team. That tackling technique last night was impeccable. And I love the couple of his. He was able to get those players down to the ground. Now, he still looks like he's an 18-year-old, but that core strength and that technique was just perfect.
It is a little bit like, as Phoenix said, though, he does look like he's got a very steely resolve at the moment. And even I saw a couple of times there were people trying to knock him around a bit, and he didn't put up with back. And he's not playing like a soft wimp, which is sometimes what he had been accused of in the past. He's playing good, tough footy.
Interesting, Nicky, because I agree with you. Our tackling technique was fantastic, and what I've noticed, when we do manage to pin arms, we're not slinging. We're dropping, which, this is something that makes me laugh about this whole sling tackle thing. People go on and say, that's how kids are taught to tackle. They're not actually taught to sling. They're actually taught to drop at the knees when you grab a guy in a tackle like that. And what I've noticed that we do more often than not is exactly that. We do bring our body weight down, which brings the opponent to the ground without actually having any sideways force. And there are a couple of times where we tackled so well with the arms pinned that the Essendon player was basically looking at the umpire going, well, shit, I can't do anything. It was just that good.
Yeah, I mean, there were at least a couple with a line there looking like stunned mullet staring at the umpire and waiting for to blow the whistle and let them get out of this misery.
Yeah, it was almost like a submission hold. Who else have we got here? Tommy Lynch again, a power of a game running up and down.
Cockwomble.
Yeah, he will get a cockwomble, but we'll talk about that in a minute. 17 disposals, 8 marks, kicked a goal, had 3 tackles as well. 4 inside 50s for Tommy Lynch, went at 76.5%. efficiency, had 11 score involvements, which is his strength to our team. Just another solid performance from Lynchy, apart from the worst, and Rory Sloane confirmed on game day this morning that he has taken over the mantle from Richie Douglas as the worst miss in club history.
Couldn't see how he missed it, but he did. The shocker.
I think that was quite funny because he revealed the little chat that he and Sauce were actually having in the centre of the ground about how to set up, and then as soon as they saw him miss, they just went, shit, this is going to come
quick. Exactly. They were completely out of position. it was a shocker, and, it would have been a terrible miss under a closer game, but he could have a chuckle about it. But, geez, Lynchy, come on. He nearly tripped over trying to kick that ball, actually. Huey Greenwood, as we mentioned before, just adds another dimension, and I thought he actually added another dimension to his own game on Saturday night with some of his marking. Had 16 touches, 6 and 10, but took 7 marks and a couple of really good ones as well. Had the 3 clearances, the 6 contested possessions, 4 marks inside 50, and 8 score involvements. It looked as if we were playing him in a little bit more of an attacking fashion this week.
Yeah, and he took a couple of strong marks, and you saw after the game he was showing his wingspan, which is some ridiculous wingspan he's got with these long, long arms.
204 centimetres. His arms are longer than I am.
Your arms, your wingspan is supposed to be the same as your height, and his wingspan exceeds his height by 13 centimetres. And it's something that we've suspected, given that he's able to intercept those close-in handballs so often. But 13 centimetres over the average wingspan to height ratio is just incredible.
He's built like a frog. Like really long arms, short body, long arms.
A knuckle dragger.
Look, I thought of the rest, I felt our defence as a unit was pretty good. We've talked about Lukey Brown. I thought Kelly played well. Lever was found a little bit wanting when Pikey, I thought, quite shrewdly put him one-on-one with Danaher. But did some good things in his normal intercept role. I felt like Tiles did okay, although he struggled to run with Hooker at times. I'm wondering whether we might actually give him a week off this week. But overall, I thought our back six did really well.
Can we give some mention to Keith's game on Danaher when he was on?
Yeah, I was going to mention it myself because I don't think Danaher got a goal while he was standing Keith.
Nope.
Well, Alex Keith took a team-high 11 marks, which was equal with Josh. Had 18 disposals, 11 marks, a couple of tackles.
And a bounce!
Yeah, 94% disposal efficiency, 7-1 percenters, 4 score involvements. And what I liked about Alex's game was his one-on-one work. There were times when he was terribly out of position because of a fast entry, and yet he was able to hold his ground, and I like his technique of using his opposite hand to spoil when he's caught in front of an opponent. It's an excellent technique.
Yeah, now, hang on, he's a left footer. Is he left-handed? So he actually could be using his dominant hand then.
It might be his dominant hand, but generally speaking, what you will do will use the hand that is closest to your opponent, rather than basically go side on and use your opposite hand. But what he's actually doing is keeping touch on his opponent as the opponent's running back with that closest hand, and then having the awareness to have the other arm up to intercept or spoil the ball. It's a unique technique, and it works very well for him.
Now, it was really interesting. There was a bit of discussion today regarding the way he defends, in that he doesn't grapple, he doesn't hang on, he stands off the play, and a few people didn't like that. And I countered it with, he's not strong enough or has the knowledge to do that grappling, etc., because he knows he's quick, because he knows he's got quite a good reach and a good jump. He can stand off that little bit And like you just said, either hold off with one hand or he can then come in and intercept, mark or punch. It means he's not being held down by that forward and outbodied.
Well, I was absolutely super impressed with his game. Super impressed. And to the point that I was thinking to myself, well, you've got Talia, you've got Lever. Does Hardigan get back and take his place? Because at the moment, I think he's playing very good footy.
Yeah, I don't know whether Hardo gets back in. I think Hardo might have some issues still with his hamstring. The thing about what you were saying, Nick, with Alex, is as a defender, there's two ways that you can defend. And if you decide to engage physically, the danger is that the forward can push off you, which means that not only does he gain a yard, but it takes you two or three then to catch up, and it's nigh on impossible. But by essentially relying on your ability to read the ball yourself and engage in a genuine one-on-one contest, the forward doesn't have that ability to push off you or to grapple with you and, you know, limit your ability to spoil the ball. You know, I think Rance is one that does that a bit. Josh Gibson's another one that tends to do that a bit. You won't see Josh Gibson grappling very often. And I think it suits Keith's strengths very well, his speed and his ability to jump and read the play.
Great coaching from Pods.
He's certainly a much, much better player than I expected him to be. I saw him a few times in the snaffle, and quite frankly, I think he's playing better with the big boys than he did down there.
How often is that the case, though, Macca?
Yep, he just has risen to the level, hasn't he?
Yep. I thought Brad Crouch had a quiet game. It seemed to have a fit of the fumbles, Bradley, for whatever reason, but given that he's had a month of really good form, we'll let him off on that one. I felt like Riley Knight was a bit quiet. The danger, I think, with Knighter is that he can drift in and out of games and needs to probably find a way to get involved a bit more often. Charlie Cameron's an interesting one. How did you guys see his game? 13 touches, 6 marks, 6 tackles, 9 inside 50s, but only went at 38.5% disposal efficiency. Had 5 score involvements, but committed 7 turnovers. Funny old game from Charlie, and I'm still convinced that there's something going on in the background with him at the moment.
Well, you know, the rumours are that he wants to go home to Brisbane, even though he's contracted for next year. And maybe that's reflected in his form a little bit. Certainly up and down.
I actually liked his game better than Knight's. I thought, even though, yeah, he had those turnovers, a lot of his stuff was a lot more proactive and was smarter in terms of where he was deciding to try and kick to, etc. Has some really good marking contests, as well as Vardy Magic has just pointed out. So for me, this was actually one of his better games than what we've seen at the moment. So I was kind of pleased to see that he was working his way into the game.
Yeah, on that one, Nikki, I felt like Charlie had more of an impact on the game than Knighter.
Yeah.
In key parts of the ground and at key moments, a couple of his marks were really, really solid. And, you know, as the knock on Charlie is always that he doesn't get enough involvement. But sometimes it's difficult to know where he's actually being played and what his role is. But, you know, it wasn't the worst game we've seen from Charlie. I just wish he'd look a little bit happier. I kind of feel bad for the guy because he doesn't look happy at the moment.
Well, he apparently is homesick, and maybe that's what's showing.
Eduardo was another quiet one, although he did, you know, threaten to cause havoc up forward, but he only had the 7 touches.
Channel,
and
he's really happy in the change rooms from my source.
He only kicked the one behind. He had 4 tackles, 4 clangers as well. But I guess, you know, sometimes it's a game for our tall forwards and sometimes it's a game for our small forwards. And it looked to me as if it just wasn't the type of game that Eddie could really get that much involved.
Yeah, we've got to be honest, though. His opponent, young Andrew McGrath, who was, I think, wasn't he the number one draft pick? He had 25 disposals, and I thought played a terrific game for Essendon.
I actually thought Eddie was going to have a quiet game because we saw with Lynch when he came back, he had that really good first up game and then he had the drop off in the second game. Eddie's come back, he's had that really good first off game, and I thought that, yep, this is the second game's going to find him out.
I'm not distressed by the fact that he had a quiet game, by the way, because, I mean, the man's not a machine. He just can't do it every week. So good, better for him to have it off this week and bring the goodies to Adelaide Oval on next weekend.
I mean, seriously, though, if all of our forward line actually lives up to their expectations every game, like all of them, holy crap, our 112-point average is going to go up considerably. It's going to be at least 150 or 160.
No, you're quite right, Nikki. I think we have to be honest and give credit where it's due and give young McGrath a pat on the back for Essendon. I thought he played an outstanding game, and I thought he beat Eddie one-on-one several occasions.
Yeah, I didn't actually have the impression that McGrath, I mean, he obviously was, but I never got the sense that Eddie was being blanketed by McGrath.
Neither.
So, and look, I'm with you, Nikki, because footy just doesn't work that way. You can't have six forwards all kicking five goals. It just, footy never works that way. You know, at times we've had Gov bob up for three or four, we've had Jenkins bob up for three or four, we've had Tex bob up for a bag, or Eddie, you know, and generally speaking, we'll get one or two of those guys, and it often relies on how the ball's coming in, how the defence is playing against our forwards. And to me, it just didn't appear as though Eddie had that many opportunities. We've got to remember that he is just an opportunist small forward.
Correct.
He's not Gary Ablett. And I just don't think the game particularly lent itself to a highlights package from Eddie this week.
Well, and there certainly wasn't one. But as I said before, everyone's going to have a quiet game now and again. And I'd rather it be this particular game rather than next week.
So that leaves us...
Are we going to have a chat about McGovern?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I actually, as you just pointed out there, we've had him bob up. And, I mean, he should have had four goals. And you're quite right in that we haven't lost a game without him. I mean, to me, he is now the most important one we need to keep out of him and Lever. And I hope the rumours are true that he's agreed to terms. I thought his movement was really nice. There was some great... Was it an Atkins kick that he kicked it to him was superb. Just his presence down there really, really worried that Essendon defence.
Just on leave, perhaps our coach put him on Danaher just to get him beaten now and again so he might settle for less money, realise he's not as good as he thought he was.
Well, you know, I mean, we all love Jakey, and we love the way he plays, but I must admit that some of the comments that have been coming from him over the last few weeks are of a lad that is pretty comfortable with his own ability, but perhaps may have just got ahead of himself a little bit.
That's all right.
And the cynic in me wouldn't mind betting that Pikey chucked him back on Big Joey just for a little while, just to see how he's going. But I don't know whether that's something that in the heat of a game you would actually do. But as whether it was intentional or just, you know, in the normal course of events, whenever Jake does find himself in one-on-one contests, he does struggle. He struggled against Kurnow, he struggled against other players at times, and he certainly struggled against Danaher, although that's no, you know, Danaher's no easy task anyway. But, you know, I guess if he's going to move and if a team's going to pay $750 for essentially a rebounding halfback flanker who can intercept, you know, good luck to him, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that... I think when Nicky said, I think if we have to keep one, it would have to be McGovern, I think, because I think Keith is showing that we can, we maybe not at the same level, but we can replace him, Lever, much more adequately. really good forwards like McGovern. They don't come along very often.
I'm glad you've come around to my thinking, Macca, because I've been saying McGovern over Lever all season for that very reason, that you blokes like that just don't come along very often, and having the three of them up there, just it's impossible to match up on. And it's not as if they're, like, each of those three players could hold down a key post in their own right. The fact that we've got three of them just makes it nigh on impossible to keep them all down.
Yeah, no, you have. Well, I'm not saying it was you particularly who persuaded me, but now I have come around to the same, by sheer observation, that Lever at times looks mortal, and McGovern, on the other hand, well, he's mortal. He can do something freakish that which will win you games.
Yeah, the only knock I have on Gov at the moment is that he can sometimes drop the ones that he shouldn't drop, the easy ones, and I think that's just a concentration thing more than anything else. But talk about being able to make something happen. He's the one for mine. Him and Eddie up forward are the two that can make things happen, Gov in the air and Eddie at ground level.
The interesting thing is that perhaps McGovern has been having more of a wrestle in his own mind, and hopefully he's come to a conclusion on that. Lever, on the other hand, is you wouldn't think there was any doubt about what's going on with him, because he just he's so confident in off the ground and confident on the ground that you think that he's made his mind up one way or the other.
I'm not convinced Lever's going. I'm actually in the stay camp. I don't think Lever's going. I certainly think he's been entertaining offers, and I think a lot of that is to maximise his own contract. But I don't actually think he's going, because the thing that makes me think that, apart from the mixed messages that we've been getting in the media, is that he's a competitive bastard. And he's currently in a team that looks like it's going to be in the premiership hunt for the next couple of years. And I don't think Jake would actually forgive himself if he left an organisation in the position that we're in at the moment for a club that, like Collingwood or someone like that, who may not compete for the next 5 or 6 years.
Well, that's a very valid point, and time will be the answer to that. I hope they both stay, because it's just sheer talent, between the two of them. But I am starting to swing around into the fact that probably more important to keep McGovern.
Yeah, that's kind of like where I'm at. I'm like you, Phoenix, in that I've seen him sitting at SNFL games and how involved he gets with them. You know, you've got other players that sit there looking on Facebook or whatever, because like, oh, we're here, but I don't really need to watch the game. But he's just full on into it. He is such a competitive bugger.
Yeah, certainly is. And look, let's hope we keep them both. And let's hope we keep them both for the next 5 years, because, all speculation aside, they're integral to our team, and they both make such a difference. And I'd certainly mean no disrespect to Jakey, because he's so dynamic off halfback, and his intercepting and his ability to sell a bit of candy is invaluable off that halfback line. And hopefully he decides that the impending success, or the possible success with this group, is worth hanging around for.
Yep, as I say, all we can say is time will be the answer.
And that brings us to the end of the weekend wrap, I reckon. We're just over the hour mark. It's been a good night. I think, in summary for me, it was a serviceable win. We did what we needed to do. I don't think we got out of second or third gear for much of the night, and yet we won by 43 points. And it finds us top of the table with two rounds to go.
Just one player we didn't mention, Rory Sloan. And he's got that, also he got a bag on his leg. He was on the Channel 7 this morning on the 10 o'clock show, and he was saying that he thinks he'll be right for the weekend. And they had some woman up there who is an expert on injury, and with the way that Rory described it and with all the ice he's doing, et cetera, he apparently should be available for next week.
I wouldn't mind betting he misses a week. I reckon a lot's going to depend on how it comes up tomorrow, Macca. He did give that ligament on the outside of his knee, a fair old stretch. And, yeah, I don't know, they might decide to give him a rest.
Well, if you take Pike at his face value, and I must admit, he's always generally told the truth so far, he was saying he's got no intention of resting any player that's fit enough to play.
No, what I'm saying is he might not be fit enough to play.
Yeah. He did also say, Macca, that if they're not right and they need to be rested, then we will also do that. And JJ actually backed that up in his Triple M interview today, where he actually said that last year he had a bit of the ankle injury. He kept playing on last year and he just was not fit for finals. If it's a case of this year, they're talking about it, he will, and if he had an injury a bit like that again this year, he would be the first one to put his hand up and say, yep, I need
was
a rest.
Was anybody else that got injured in this game?
Well, we had
Tex foot.
Yeah, you're right, Nikki. Sorry to interrupt. Tex with his foot right at the beginning. JJ seemed to tweak a knee, tweak an ankle, but didn't seem hampered by it towards the end of the game.
Yeah, he was a little tentative in that second quarter, and because he tweaked it at the start of the second quarter, you can actually see there's a contest on the boundary line. He actually put his hands down to it, and so I noticed that quarter he was quite tentative. But in the third and definitely in the last, he worked quite well. Out of it, so I think he'll be fine.
So we're saying the only player in doubt then is Rory?
Probably.
Yeah, I would think so. And don't forget too, Macca, it's a 6-day break this week. We play on the Friday night, so that just makes it a little bit more difficult for Rory to get up. And, you know, we don't really need to win this game. It'd be great to win this game. But I don't actually think that Pike is going to show all his cards anyway. I wouldn't mind betting that we actually err on the side of caution with Sloaney.
I guess to some degree, and I know it's very hard to depict how it's going to finish up with the final four. Do you think that Pikey would have a particular team that he may prefer to play first up and help position himself by either winning or losing the games to do that?
I think with the unpredictability of what's happened this season, you can't try and engineer that. Not we're playing on Friday night.
No. Hello. We do have the advantage of the last game, of course.
I've never, ever seen a coach try to manufacture an outcome where we avoid a team in the finals, Macca. That's almost like admitting defeat.
Yep.
Oh, there's nothing like an easy ride to get there.
No, absolute bullshit.
Yeah, see, what I liked was what Blighty did against that North Melbourne game, because he knew we were going to play them in finals. And so what he did, and even though we got spanked that game, but he tried some things so he could see how North would react, how their coaching staff would react. And he then implemented stuff in the grand final because he knew what they were going to do and we were unpredictable to them.
All right, well, yeah, we'll see what happens anyhow because, as I say, I think he will play Sloane if Sloane is available.
Yeah, well, he'll play him if he's available. The question is, will he be available, Macca? That's the question. He's got 6 days to get up. He's going to be very sore boy tomorrow, I would have thought. And that leaves him, he'll basically be off the track all week recovering, I would imagine.
Interestingly, on the Crow Show today, they showed what we've been doing last week and what we're going to be doing this week as well, as we've started using the cryotherapy. So instead of using the ice bath, we're actually going into these chambers that take it to some ridiculous minus whatever. And we've been doing that specifically for these two games because we've got the 2 6-day breaks and it aids recovery in those knocks so much quicker.
So does the whole player go in, or just their injured part?
No, the whole player goes in there. They like have to wear little face masks. They often have little beanies on their head because you just get so cold. It's something ridiculous, minus 100 and something or whatever, and you're just only in there for 4 minutes. And what does is just lowers the body temperature so much that it actually helps with the healing quicker.
Anyway, we can talk about that on Tuesday night. My internet's starting to die, or yours is, or something, Nikki, I don't know. And we're into our hour of 10, so let's call it a night. And I don't have any outro music again. but thanks, Nikki and Macca, and thanks, everyone, for joining us on the chat. Obviously, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at AFL Crowcast. And we will... Oh, don't forget to listen to the Crowbar Boys sometime... over the next 24 hours, they'll be uploading their take on the weekend's events, and we will be back with Peter J on Tuesday night with Tuesday Night Live. See you, everyone.
Yeah, good night, all.
Night.